We're here to uncover secret conspiracy theories that they don't want you to know about. Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
What we need now is Commander Riker from Star Trek to just give a montage of nothing. It's total fabrication. We made it up, etc., etc. Hey guys,
made this one up.
We made this one up. Welcome to episode 392 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host Dre Harrison, and welcome to our Formula One episode for the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort.
They're putting chemicals in the Red Bull that turned the freaking frogs orange.
RJ has gone full native on this episode.
He's turned into Alex Jones, and I think he just broke his own microphone. That takes some doing.
I owe $49 million in defamation fees. I'm going to eat a bigger bowl of chili. FIA doesn't want you to know. Yuki Tsunoda, Nelson Piquet Jr., Norberto Fontana. It's all related.
Oh,
that's
God. It.
That's the show. Places you can find us.
This is the most off the rails intro that I've ever done in the 8 years I've been doing this show. That takes some doing. Way to go, gentlemen. That's an effort. we got Jason in the audience section saying he wants a refund. Like, I don't blame him.
Yeah, we blew out his ears. Don't worry. You can buy a new set of those.
Of course, yeah, they're replaceable, it's fine. We'll be getting into the 2022 Dutch Grand Prix. Well, not much of it, actually, to be completely honest with you. It's more to do with everything else that happened around the Dutch Grand Prix of 2022. We'll talk a little bit about the race itself, because it was a pretty conventional, straightforward strategy race, unless you were logged on to Twitter during the race itself. Because, oh boy, Yuki Tsunoda thinking a wheel came off his car. It's like that dominoes meme where it goes up to the FIA is rigging the entire championship towards Red Bull again. It's that time of the week again.
It's, you know, the smallest domino is Prince Devitt is really tired of his tag team partner's stupid antics. The biggest domino is CM Punk and the Elite having a backstage altercation after a pay-per-view press conference. All of this started when Apollo 55 and New Japan broke up.
Oh, yeah. It's wild, to say the least. But we'll be talking about the differential failure heard around the world and what it meant and the discourse regarding that as Max Verstappen won his 30th career Grand Prix. His 10th for the season. Already, we have seven to go in this year, and Verstappen has won 2/3 of the races this season. Wild shit. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the single biggest debate in motorsport that's broken off in the last week. Red Bull want to bring in Colton Herta from IndyCar. It's really a lot more complicated than that, but don't let people on Twitter tell you otherwise. We'll also talk about the resolution to the situation at McLaren. They were finally able to confirm who the second driver in their Formula One team will be for 2022. It's or 2023, I should say. It's exactly who you think it is. And
Mika Häkkinen, the sabbatical is over.
Finally, it's finally over.
Oh. I mean, praise
why
me.
Does Mika Häkkinen look younger and less blonde? And why is his name Oscar all of a sudden?
Why is he Australian? Like, that's weird.
It is a hell of an accent switch.
It is. It's the complete polar opposite to that. But we'll get through all of that in the next hour or so. With me, as you could probably guess by now, Cam Buckley. Hello, sir.
There's nothing I could say in this moment will top how RJ opened the show, so just continue.
Nope, yeah, well, that, you got it covered. And RJ O'Connell.
The Ferrari has a yellow engine cover for Monza this weekend.
Oh my God. You know, Ferrari's year is being so deeply Ferrari'd that the the truck carrying their power units caught on fire on the way to Monza after Zandvoort. And they're doing a commemorative livery that is getting them dunked on from up on high from just about everyone.
It's because they didn't go all in on the piss car.
I like the rear wing. I like the front wing. The engine cover is an abomination that begs for apocalypse, to quote one James Rolfe.
Ferrari out here cosplaying the Kansas City Chiefs. Much like the tenure of Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, they may have peaked too early this season. NFL season starts tomorrow at the time of recording. It already started by the time this podcast is going out. It's weird having expectations. Go Bills!
Yeah, go Patriots. Can't wait to go 6-11 again. It's going to be great.
We're fucking mid. We're fucking mid. We're fucking mid.
You'll at least crack 500.
I'm expecting a decidedly mid, not too good, not too bad year.
Thank you for listening to our football podcast. Tell everybody where you can find us.
Yeah, we're on youtube.com/ NFL Sunday Ticket. Motorsport 101. We're on facebook.com/ Motorsport 101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. If you got to follow us personally, you can at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917. If you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon as well, patreon.com/ Motorsport 101. And all of our content, including written pieces on everything in motorsport we've done that's happened this weekend. The Dutch Grand Prix, MotoGP San Marino Grand Prix, and IndyCar's Grand Prix at Portland is all covered by yours truly on the website. A lot of fun stuff and not so fun stuff to talk about regarding that weekend up on there. Of course, the next 3 episodes will be all about that as well. So check that out. Also, one more thing before we get into the main discussions. The nomination ballots for the Motorsport 101 Awards for 2022 is now open. You can send in your nominations for the Motorsport 101 Awards for 2022 and have them debated on by literally some podcasters in the month of December. If you want to get the nomination sheet, we've pinned it on our Twitter account, but you could also follow our friend of the show at Jason_Poland_87. He's the guy that organizes our nominations for us. Follow him on there. Tell him you said hi, or at least just send any nominations on there. So you could do that as well. We'll be doing the Motorsport 101 Awards in December. So check that out. The nomination list is now available. So check that out if you haven't already. So send them in. Right, without further ado, let's get into the 2022 Dutch Grand Prix.
You know, in his first home race, Max Verstappen had to win a game of raw speed. This time it was a game of strategy. He was attempting the two-stopper from pole, with both Mercs on the unconventionally good hard tire going for the alternate one-stopper. Until we had the incident. Yuki Tsunoda suffers a progressive differential failure over the course of about 2 laps, leads to a VSC with 24 laps to go, and everyone gets a cheap pit stop. And then Valtteri Bottas's power unit died with 18 laps to go, bringing in another safety car, another strategic switch with Max and George Russell, switching to softs and leaving Hamilton out in the lead on used mediums. It didn't even take to the first corner. Verstappen drag races him down the main straight, takes off and wins by 4 seconds over George Russell to take his 10th win of 2022, 4 in a row, 30th of his career, and inching closer and closer to the in-season wins record. What do we think of this one, guys?
You know, before Hamilton debriefed and, you know, before the whole thing with the engine mode, I was shocked that at a track like Zandvoort, that track position, prime track position, as it turns out, would not be more important than having a fresh set of tires. That's what I was thinking that, like, you know, even if Hamilton stays out on worn tires, it's a tough place to pass. But then, of course, he doesn't switch. Not how here. I mean, don't get me wrong. Passing at Zandvoort ain't like, you know, passing it like.
It wasn't easy to pass, like we've seen at some tracks this year, but it also wasn't nearly as difficult as it was last year.
It was possible. We saw many an overtake into turn one this time around. It was doable this time around. They even had a great wheel-to-wheel fight between Mick Schumacher and Sebastian Vettel in the middle of the circuit, let alone down the home straight. So that was quite reassuring. This was like a 6 out of 10 race.
Yeah, it was the solid Dutch Grand Prix. I think we were all expecting this to be just an absolute slog, unless you are a super down bad Verstappen fan who just wants the guy to run up the score. And by the way, with the way things are going right now, Verstappen could. I don't think it's a matter of if he's going to break the single season wins record. It's a matter of to what degree.
It's that. I mean, this was the bogey track given the traits of these cars across the year.
Mm.
He could break Seb's consecutive wins record with races to spare if he keeps going like this.
We have friends of our community that have been saying for like weeks that he could win out the rest of the season. And the more I watch it, the more I think, you know, he just might. But man, was I not having a good time when a driver that I really liked became the focal point of the latest Formula One conspiracy. New World Order, Illuminati, it's all connected. The religious cult that was backing Japan's Liberal Democratic Party. Oh, Jesus, that's too soon?
Dre, you do the. You can talk about this. Head over to formulawars.com and we can unpack all this.
Yeah, I will get on the hazmat suit and enter the toxicity. I mean, I was watching the race in real time on social media. I normally live tweet these races pretty much every single week. The amount of people that immediately jumped up and said this was sus when there was actually a perfectly rational explanation as to everything as to what happened is pretty laughable.
Yeah, it was also like at least Nelson Piquet Jr. dumping into the wall at Singapore. At least that was slick. At least you could buy that Nelson Piquet Jr. just ran out of talent on his own.
Right. This was, as Cam described, a differential failure. They are hard to spot from a pit wall straight away.
You want to know something?
Mm.
You want a fun fact?
Go on.
I asked my dad about this. Because he blew about 4 diffs in his drag racing Camaro across the years. And, you know, it feels like a loose wheel because in this case, one of those wheels would come off because you snapped the rear axle. That's not how F1 cars work, but it feels like one of your wheels isn't on because it's only driving one side of the car.
Yeah.
Right. So, of course, we get the radio message of Yuki saying the wheels aren't fitted. It makes sense given the failure that he's got. He loosens his seatbelts, which, by the way, did get him a reprimand for that because that's a big no-no. But
given he's got so many reprimands now that he's got a 10-place grip penalty for his troubles.
Yeah, his fifth of the year, which is a 10-place grip penalty. But just as he's about to abandon the car, AlphaTauri obviously communicate with their mechanics, say no, the tires were fitted properly. Come back to Yuki and say, yeah, no, the wheels are fitted. Keep going. Of course, he's in nurse the car home mode at this point because, again, as we now know, the diff was broken. They get
cars basically crabbing down the road at that stage.
Exactly. He gets it back to the pit lane. They retighten his seatbelts just in case. They send him back out there. They realize, okay, it's probably the diff, and then they park him second time round to finally finish his race. The amount of people that immediately assumed that this was a conspiracy to help Red Bull win their home race was off the charts, and yeah, it's laughable that it even gotten to this point.
I got a good gauge of how many people were just kind of joking about it, but then I also got a sense of like, you know, maybe people were really invested in this.
Oh no. No, there was the usual six or seven. You know what their profile picture is. You know what hashtag is in their bio. That same six or seven people whose entire online existence is devoted to worshiping one driver and forgetting to feed their kids were immediately on that conspiracy game.
Yeah, and look, of course, this being the second time in 10 months we've had a major discussion regarding this, this was always going to pop off. There was a rational explanation for everything that happened. I think people wanted the drama of it, and it's
the drama, Mick.
I think the big one, I think the big quote was over the radio and was basically the one to go out of the pit lane and stop the car. And I'm thinking when AlphaTauri's saying that, they're thinking that in a sense, because that would trigger a safety car regardless if there was a car stopped in the pit lane exit.
Yeah, there's not much runoff room at Zandvoort. That's why people like racing at Zandvoort.
Yeah, but that's the general rule of thumb at most tracks, is if there's a car stopped in the pit lane at that, like we saw with Raikkonen with the finger trouble he had at Bahrain 2018. I think what they were probably thinking in that moment is that, okay, we don't want to clog up the pit lane and then potentially screw over our other driver.
And it's already a tight pit lane.
Yeah. It was already tight.
I'm thinking they probably made that call is to not screw over Gasly if they want to bring him in for a stop, because then that really disrupts everyone. So in trying to not be disruptive, they disrupted the race.
Yeah. Point is that people already had their axe to grind at this point, as if Verstappen needed any sort of help to win a race.
He was completely dominated. Point lead going in.
There's nothing
to gain.
No, not really. They were already comfortably winning this race. And you know, what happened at the end with Mercs and getting their strategy call wrong, I think was ultimately irrelevant in the end, because I think Max always had the pace to win. What was embarrassing after the race was that not only were there more discussions about a conspiracy and people looking for something grand to...
And we need to also mention, because it wasn't just those on social media.
Mm-hmm.
It was also Sky Sports.
Yeah, Sky didn't help with this either.
Ted Kravitz openly said it while reporting on the race.
Yeah.
It was fishy.
Yeah, and so of course a lot of people led into that. It doesn't mean Ted Kravitz is an oracle for everything on Formula One, but you know, he got the info about Monza's ticket situation wrong live on the broadcast in this exact same weekend. So, you know, Ted Kravitz is not the gospel you think he is. Love him, but he's not.
He does a great job, but nobody gets it right all the time.
I think being the official broadcaster saying something that incendiary is very, very dangerous.
Yeah, it's extremely suspect that. And it's only going to fan the flames, which, look, they want to do to a degree because they're a TV network and they live off ratings and clicks. I get that. But, you know,
getting roasted is getting posted.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And the fact that there was a screenshot taken from Formula One TV of Red Bull Racing's chief strategist, Hannah Schmitz, that did the rounds on social media, with her smiling during the race because Red Bull strategy worked out, which is a completely fucking normal thing to do. Like, a completely normal thing to do in a positive situation for your team. And the fact that she was clowned and dunked on and compared to the cast of Mean Girls or called ugly by people, and just the amount of toxic behavior that was talking about her, despite doing nothing wrong, is absolutely abhorrent on every level.
Absolutely.
And it's embarrassing that in a sport where many of its younger fans want to push for diversity, want to push for more representation in the sport that they love, which, let's not forget, is 90% white male, right? Hannah Schmitz should be fucking celebrated. Like, the best team in Formula One has a woman as their lead strategist. That is awesome on every level. That's fantastic.
Fantastic. For the sport.
On every level. I friggin' love that that's a thing, right? We should be celebrating this. But it goes to show you that once the mask comes down from certain people, it's like the representation only matters if they're wearing a black t-shirt instead of a navy one.
Yeah.
And that's shit.
It doesn't matter. All the good in the sport doesn't matter if it's not working for me, which is just a shit mentality to have.
Yeah, it's selfish.
It's already bad enough for women in the sport when there are at least 15 incidents of women reporting being harassed at the Dutch Grand Prix over the weekend.
Yep, indeed.
And none of that helps.
I happen to make a tweet about this situation. You can go find it if you want. I'm not going to repeat what I said here.
Mm.
Because frankly, joking about it any more than I heard that already was is really doesn't help.
Yeah.
But and beyond that point, regardless of the fact that you know, it did end up basically resetting everyone onto the same strategy, it ultimately, I don't think, would have mattered, because this is the scenario if that VSC doesn't happen. Max Verstappen goes long, pits onto softs, and he's released behind the Mercs, who are on 30-plus lap-old hard tires with a 2-plus second a lap offset. And as we saw from that engine, the power of God and anime in the back of his car.
Right.
They were damned if they did and damned if they didn't. And same with the final call after another Ferrari engine failure. Valtteri Bottas's engine packed up.
Oh, yeah. We can explain Yuki Tsunoda's differential failure. But how could we possibly justify, you know, known Mercedes mole Valtteri Bottas having a very convenient power unit failure?
Remember, friends, these games are for two players.
Yep.
Even after that,
noted Mercedes Mules Sauber Engineering.
hey, remember the C9 and the C11?
Oh yeah,
it's all connected, man.
That's right.
Even with that call, Mercedes were not in a position to win just on lap time. The best they probably could have managed out of that would be to pit both cars and get the easy double podium, because, man, this is the third race in a row Ferrari has shown up and gotten their ass spanked on race pace.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's before Carlos Sainz's first pit stop turned into yet another case of Ferrari comedy. The gift that just keeps on giving.
Yeah.
And that's before even getting to the unsafe release, which dropped him down to, what was it, eighth as a final result? Oh my God. Ferrari are legitimately in danger of losing second in the constructors after being just miles up earlier on in the season.
Ferrari have got a genuine chance of finishing third in a two Hunts race.
All you can do is laugh, because if you don't, you cry. But I shed all my tears for Ferrari a couple years ago.
Yeah, pretty much.
But Mercedes tried to go for the win and really kind of overextended themselves, and Lewis was on the receiving end of that.
Well, don't worry, kids. Radio messages aren't to be taken seriously when Lewis Hamilton is the one on the receiving end of it. Just thought I'd point that one out.
Yeah, the team doesn't deserve it. Look, it's people say things in the heat of the moment. I don't really hold it against him.
No, we shouldn't.
And he apologized after the race.
Yeah.
It's a dead issue for me as far as I'm concerned.
I've said it before, like, the worst thing you could say about Lewis Hamilton is that he's a bad loser.
Yeah, and the good of Lewis far outweighs the bad. I just wish that same benefit of the doubt was given out a week earlier. Again,
oh yeah,
bit hypocritical, but hey, it's all funny. We had signed caps we had signed caps left in the garages. It's fine, you know.
And to that effect, how many points is Max's lead now?
109.
Oh God,
championship's over.
He could conceivably wrap this up in Singapore. If Perez and Charles fail to score more than 20 points over the next races, it's done.
Yeah, it's done at Singapore in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, Rebels more realistically, got both these titles on WAP.
More realistically, he's going to be crowned at Suzuka, but it's a matter of when, not if.
Oh, yeah. Could you imagine at Honda's home track?
It's a shame it's a Red Bull powertrain.
On the subject of Red Bull, we're going to finish this show out with hot transfer market news. One deal that has already happened, but of course we got to talk about something that has caused a great deal of consternation among all corners of the Formula One and motor racing community. And that is the fact that Colton Herta, despite sitting eighth in this year's IndyCar Series standings with one race to go, despite being mathematically eliminated from championship consideration, he has a reported handshake deal to join the AlphaTauri Formula One team for the 2023 season if the FIA grants a special exemption to give Colton a super license for racing. Here are some of the tricky situations. You normally need 40 points to get a license. Colton only has 32 as it stands. However, the FIA would open the door for potential force majeure and special permission if the driver has more than 30. This was a rule put in place during the pandemic due to some series not being available, like the W Series in 2020. Herta's Indy Lights points weren't counted in full due to a lack of full-time competition. That is a series that had notoriously been struggling for car counts in the last few years.
I think it had nine cars the year that Colton Herta was in it.
And, you know, it's not the fault of the guys on top, because, you know, if your championship is led by Colton Herta and Patricio Award.
Yeah.
I mean, the top tier talents are not the problem there. Mm. There's been intense debate on both sides of the motorsports pandits whether or not IndyCar is worthy of more super license points. Now, only the series champion gets guaranteed status in IndyCar. They get the 40 points if you win the championship, whereas the top three in Formula 2, they get the 40 points right away. So we've not had a driver come straight in from the highest ranks of American open wheel racing graduating to Formula 1 directly since Sebastian Bourdais did it coming out of the last year of a split form of American open wheel racing to drive 1.5 seasons at Toro Rosso, and nobody's done it since. Dre, should Colton Herta get his super license granted despite the lack of points? And is IndyCar being shortchanged on the FIA ladder?
This is a very complicated issue. And it all, I think, ultimately boils down to two problems. One, the entire system is based on subjectivity. And that's always going to piss off certain people, because a lot of people will think that, well, you know, my favorite series, it should be worth more than your favorite series, et cetera, et cetera. And
brother, top three in Super Formula should get the 40 license points automatically.
See? And the other issue is that, well, look, I get it. A lot of people that love IndyCar, and I've seen many people that I know, people that I consider friends, a lot of people that bat for IndyCar on a regular basis will argue that IndyCar's drivers should get more credit on the global motorsports ladder. Ultimately, there's no right or wrong answer to that question. Like, it's ultimately subjective. Like you could make... I personally... I've got no problem with Colton Herta's ability as a driver.
Yeah, dude, I love that Toro Rosso, as cynical as the motivations are behind this from Helmut Marko, right? It's a good gamble that I haven't seen in the driver market since, well, Max Verstappen came up.
Right.
And he is the reason why we have this form of gatekeeping in the first place, which is the super license system. And look, I guess I don't mind that it offers some level of, like, minimal gatekeeping. Like, you don't want some guy that just...
You don't want someone coasting on purely money and connections to get into F1 and then be struggling to even make 107%. That is not what is being requested here.
Yeah. But what about Nikita Mazepin? Well, that was just an incredible Herculean carry job by the brilliant engineers and mechanics in High Tech GT. That's just a phenomenal job for them. You can't win them all. But, like, this was always going to be the biggest stress test of the super license system, because this is a driver that people who predominantly watch Formula One don't get a gauge of. And you might look at his results on a Wikipedia page and think he's won some races, but he's never competed for a title. But I'll tell you, what I've seen of him is that Colton Herta, especially on a road street course, the relevant skill of a Formula One driver, when he is on it,
oh yeah,
he's unbeatable.
Well, and the thing is that we have context because we actively watch IndyCar, and we know that the big examples I'll show this year is that the Indy 500 matters so much more than every other race. It matters more than the championship itself. And if you have a bad Indy 500 and your name isn't Scott Dixon, because, well, Scott Dixon just is that. He is that guy.
What guy?
The guy in the corner having pancakes. It destroys your season. It destroys your championship. And from the month of May this year, where Colton was looking early on, was looking like a title threat, had a couple shaky rounds, and then had the month of May from hell between an engine failure, which truncated pretty much all of his practice, to then a disastrous crash on carb day, which meant that his primary car was destroyed and he spent race day a back marker.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has only had one good day at the Indianapolis 500, and that was in 2020, the weird year where the Indy 500 happened in August, and there wasn't as much passing, and everybody else was just sucking up the crumbs of Takuma Sato and Scott Dixon all day.
Pretty much. And, yeah, this is going to be the problem. Like, Formula One fans will always have a level of snootiness regarding anything else in terms of motorsport. Mm-hmm. IndyCar, sometimes their fan base has a level of insecurity about where their series is in relation to everywhere else. It's not going to end well when those two worlds clash.
Mm-hmm.
And it
is big six of one, half a dozen of the other energy.
Yeah. And the straight up answer to this is there is no straightforward answer on this. Like, here's the thing, right? I love Colton Herta. I would have no problem. I would love to see him in a Formula One car. The issue is that if you're the FIA, you have no reason to bend the rules for this man. None. Like, why? Like the Formula 2 ladder, as flawed as it is, has also produced an incredible recent set of drivers. Verstappen, Leclerc, Russell, Norris, Albon, Gasly. You know, when the bottom rung is Giovinazzi, Nicholas Latifi, and Nikita Mazepin, you've not done too bad.
Yeah.
It works. And it's hard. Like, the backbone of the sport is guys that have come up through that Formula 2 ladder in recent years. These are the guys that you're going to be rooting for the next decade. There is no question about that.
And if you're Formula Motorsport Limited, the promoters of Formula 2 and Formula 3, first and foremost, why didn't you put your foot down and say that Yuri Vips can't race after that incident? And second, you know, it's not in your best interest to just promote other series as a pathway to Formula One. Like,
why would you?
Know,
but then that's just it, is that this whole system is, you know, we were talking the other night with King about this, that this whole system was not intended to be a rigid distribution of points as it has been. It was meant to change depending on the value of each series relative to kind of the global trend every couple of years.
Mm.
And since then, the architects of that system, of the super license system, have moved on into other roles. And the current kind of gatekeeper of the super license system, those in power to actually make those changes, are more than content to keep it the way it is because it is in their best interest to do so.
Yeah.
And so the system was put in place with the intention of it evolving, and it hasn't.
Yeah.
And it cannot in its current state, unless some sort of force majeure situation like the one we're in right now comes up.
And the FIA has already shown that it can be a bit malleable when it comes to granting force majeure licenses, because Let's not forget, Naoki Yamamoto's Japanese Grand Prix practice run came with some, with a little bit of, you know, bending those hard and fast rules to get him in for one FP1 session. Yep. But that was one FP1 session of the track that he knows like the back of his hand. It's going to be a lot different when Colton Herta comes over to a whole slate of series, a whole slate of tracks that he either has not driven since his 1 or 2 years racing over in Europe, or has never driven at all.
I don't think that's such a big factor, given just the level of simulator, like the level of simulator work that these guys do now.
Yeah.
I think the track experience is not so much a big deal. I don't even think the tires are such a big deal, given that the tires that Pirelli creates for F2 and F1 are just couldn't be further apart if you tried, other than size and the sticker on the side.
Mm.
I would think that given a real chance by a team that is prepared to put its weight behind you.
Yeah.
If you are good enough, you are going to be able to show that,
yeah,
irrespective of whether it's Colton Herta or it's someone pulled up out of WEC or FE or any of these series.
Oh yeah. Without a doubt.
Given the tools that are in place now.
Like, don't get me wrong, there is always a chance that Colton Herta could wash out like Michael Andretti in less than a year and be punted back to IndyCar. But on the other hand, there is also an equally good chance that the guy that was racing the likes of Lando Norris competitively in British Formula 4 could go out there and score the majority share of AlphaTauri's points next year.
I think that's performances. I think that's running a marathon before we can walk.
Yeah.
This is more how does he get into Formula 1 from here? Because, as mentioned, with the hellscape that was his month of May this year, which, no matter who you are other than Scott Dixon, that destroys your championship. No matter what he does, he is not going to have the super license points necessary, either from IndyCar or running FP1 sessions, because the schedule will conflict a little too much.
And anecdotally, all the last guys that did it, Jacques Villeneuve won the 500 and the title. Juan Pablo Montoya was already going to be in North America as like a layover before he got to F1, and all he did was win the championship as a rookie and the 500 as a rookie. Cristiano D'Amato, we forget how much of a weapon he and Newman Haas were together in the early 2000s. And then, of course, Sebastian Bourdais won 4 straight titles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with all of those, I mean, with the exception of Bourdais, and there are circumstances around that, all of them came over and showed pretty damn well in Formula One. But I don't think the talent of Colton Herta is what's under question here.
There's a hell of a lot more
than talent that decides, look, we will say it now, we've said it before, and we will say it in the future. Formula One is not a meritocracy.
It is not a meritocracy, and it has precisely zero obligation to throw Colton Herta or anyone in IndyCar a bone. It doesn't. There's no argument that anybody could tell me otherwise. Yeah? Is it shit as a fan? Absolutely. I would love to see more drivers take part in more series, and I'd like to see that net lowered a little bit. Yeah.
Unfortunately, you do. Your obligation is your star best team in the sport is demanding to get this kid in. However much that actually matters, that's up to the FIA to decide.
Yeah, and look, for me, I don't necessarily think this is just a super license problem. Like, don't get me, because I look at the super license rules in front of me right now. IndyCar is the second highest rated series of anything on the board, right? Like, people say, oh, well, they're treating IndyCar like a junior series. That's up for debate when it gives out more points than Formula E and the World Endurance Championship and Super Formula overseas. I think that's a bit of a reach. What I would say is the problem isn't necessarily the system, because I put the 2019, 20, and 21 seasons of IndyCar into the pot with Formula 2's current requirement. The only extra 4 guys that are available for a license are Will Power, Simon Pagenaud, Pato O'Ward, and Colton Herta. 2 of those 4 guys are never getting an F1 offer anyway,
because they're almost 40 or have surpassed 40.
Right.
But then the system's doing its job in that situation, because you're getting a couple extra guys, two of which are perfectly valid options, but you're also not just letting anyone in and letting people coast off results get into F1.
No, and the point I was going to make here is that it's not even necessarily about the licenses at that point. It's about the culture of Formula One team bosses. Mm-hmm. Like, there's only been one team boss that has given a shit about IndyCar and bringing drivers in from that series into Formula One as long as I can remember, and that's Dr. Marco. Nobody else has given a shit. No one else has entertained that possibility.
No one said a word about Alex Palou last year.
Look, this is the thing.
Because it's not just about bringing an IndyCar guy in. It's about bringing an American driver in.
Right.
And the way these two bosses see it, Spain's already got Carlos Sainz Jr. It's kind of silly. Yeah. And Fernando Alonso, who will probably race until he's 60. Yeah. But they've only had... But America's only had Michael Andretti, Scott Speed, Alexander Rossi the last 30 years. Alex Rossi
having a cup of coffee in a car that could barely be considered an F1 car.
And this is my point.
The thing is, though, to meet that point, is that, but that's just it. He's trying to get someone in, and he can't.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's what it ultimately is going to boil down to here, is that, like, the point I was going to make, and Cam alluded to it, there was a 24-year-old sophomore, second-year Aster Cup champion who was a 3 car lengths away from winning the 500 last year in Alex Palou, and I didn't hear a peep from an F1 team about trying to hire him until Zak Brown lied to him to use leverage to get him on his IndyCar team.
But so, at the same time last year, we had a fairly tame, silly season, both in IndyCar and Formula One. This year, it's been complete fucking mayhem.
Yeah.
Because we'll get to that shortly.
Yeah, like, and that's the problem I've got here. It feels like this is more to do with nationalism than it is necessary to do about bringing in the best. Because, like I said, Palou was right there. And nobody heard a peep. And Helmut Marko, I suspect, is looking at this because right now his academy is in the middle of what I call a soft reboot. You look at the names right now. Liam Lawson has not blown anybody away, right? Ayumu Iwasa and Dennis Hauger are good drivers, but probably need at least another year of development, right?
Jahan Daruvala has caught way too many bad breaks, and it's a shame because Formula One could use another South Asian star on the grid that could be competitive, but it's just not going to fall that way. Like, he was already looking at opportunities outside of Red Bull. And the thing is with Dr. Marco, ever since Sebastian Vettel, he has had ridiculously high standards to where he's not going to take anybody that he doesn't think is going to win multiple world championships up to Formula One.
Right. Max Verstappen's upside is now the expectation, and
yeah,
that's really hard to meet unless you are checks notes. Max Verstappen,
right,
he's currently on course to break every single season record in the book.
Before we move on from this point, Dre, I wanted to ask, like, do you think there's like a similar thread to say superbike riders, whether it's worlds or in any national championships? And how, much like IndyCar guys haven't been getting a shake in Formula One, how superbike riders haven't been getting an opportunity in MotoGP.
Right. So what I was going to say is that the last two, production bike ladder guys who got to MotoGP was Danilo Petrucci and Cal Crutchlow. Petrux was a good MotoGP rider. He was not, I would say, world championship caliber. Same with Cal Crutchlow. Guys who had X factors in the rain, guys who were pretty quick, guys who absolutely were more than good enough.
More than capable of holding their own.
Absolutely. Yeah, but they were top 5 level championship riders who could win races on a good day. And yeah, it's proof that to a degree it can work. But the problem is that these were not big hitters on the way in. Danilo Petrucci was a world Superstock 1000 champion when he got to MotoGP, and he was on a shitty Iota bike for years. Cal Crutchlow was world Supersport champion when he got in through the back door at Tech 3 in 2011 in MotoGP. The big hitters you're thinking of, the Jonathan Reyes, the Toprak Razgatlioglus, even Tom Sykes from a decade or so ago when he won a world championship with Kawasaki. Remember him? They are not getting top-tier MotoGP offers. Jonathan Rea openly said in an interview last year, he never got a top-flight factory offer in MotoGP, despite winning 6 world championships in a row.
Well, look at the modern, I would say, is four-stroke era. Who's there as the guy who came in from production-based bikes and won it all?
Nicky Hayden.
There's only one. Nicky. He was a friggin' unicorn in that respect.
Right. The point is, it's not an exact science. And it never will be. And Jonathan was, and the one person who respected Jonathan Rea's ability massively was Ivo Suppo when he was in charge of Repsol Honda at the time. The problem was he had to handle having Danny Pedrosa, Casey Stoner, a 17-year-old freak in Marc Marquez, and Jonathan Rea, who he promised a MotoGP seat to at the same time. But he couldn't fulfill that promise because he had too much talent at Repsol Honda. Pedrosa was still one of the best riders in the world as far back as 2012. Stoner had just won a MotoGP world title. Marc Marquez was challenging for a Moto2 world title at age 18. Right? And Jonathan Rea had a cup of coffee in MotoGP standing in and was only upper midfield. Like, so it's difficult. I mean, Yamaha was flirting with Toprak in World Superbikes last year, but that never materialized in the end, despite Yamaha having a pretty dreadful situation when it comes to rider quality.
Despite all of Kanan Safaglu's agitation.
Of course.
Because Yamaha effectively has one rider right now, especially given, as we'll talk about in the MotoGP episode, Andrea Dovizioso's retirement, and they still didn't take him on.
Nope.
But then that's just it, is that there were suggestions about the super license system coming to MotoGP solely because of Darren Binder, and y'all know my thoughts about Darren Binder. He's been fine this year.
That was a prediction that I'm glad that a lot of us got wrong. He's been fine. Mm. Not fine enough to stick around the sport beyond 1 year, as it turns out, but still.
Fine as, what we were expecting coming into the season was a danger to himself and others. Yeah. He's been fine.
Yeah.
But in this case, Red Bull does want to sign Herta definitively, and there is a system in place preventing them from doing so.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is right. As a fan, I would love to see the FIA, you know, use a bit of that force majeure, use a bit of common sense.
I would love to see them dismantle the system entirely.
Sure. There's an argument you can make for that. But on the other side of the coin, the business part of my head says the FIA does not owe IndyCar a bone, in the same way that McDonald's has no obligation to promote to promote Kentucky Fried Chicken. Like, it's cool their... I'd love them to, but it's business. And the FIA has their ladder. It's an established ladder. It works well for them. It's not caused, in my opinion, too many problems regarding getting guys into Formula One, and even if it did, there are greater issues beyond the system, and that is the attitude of Formula One towards IndyCar drivers in the series.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, we've had one team boss give a shit. One. And that's not going to cut it, especially if Red Bull finds another Verstappen or Vettel or Ricciardo-level prospect, Colton Herta is getting kicked to the curb. That's the problem, you know? And the question is, you've got a series. Yeah, of course. And you've got an IndyCar community that wants to be taken seriously on the global stage, competing with a global entity, the big dog in town, the guy that isn't got the seat at the table. He is the table for Formula One by comparison. Who is under no obligation to do any sort of back scratching to get Colton Herta into Formula One. And that's going to be the problem. Because
in an ideal world, Oscar Piastri, Felipe Drugovich, and Colton Herta would all be coming up into a 24 or 26 car Formula One grid. But we're not in that ideal reality where Formula One isn't artificially capping the number of teams off at 10 to protect the interest of the one of the closed gate community that it already has. I'd love to see it be different, but it's just not like that. But I'll tell you this for free. Colton Herta and Yuki Tsunoda, if that comes good, I don't care. That's my favorite team. I just hope the car's good enough for both of them.
Yeah, because this year's car is a dog.
Yeah, good luck with that.
From one shit show to another, we finally have our answer of who will drive the second McLaren in 2023.
Oh, we just gave a certain prize to McLaren, and we're all throwing.
No, it was not delivered. It was not delivered. It is currently in limbo. It'll get there. But yes, the court has ruled. It's not really a court, but you know what I mean. Piastri's driving for McLaren next year.
Yep, McLaren won their dispute in the contract dispute board of the FIA, and within minutes of that decision being official, they officially announced Oscar Piastri to be driving their car for next year.
Is Alpine's tweet still up?
I believe so.
I gotta say the contract dispute, I imagine it would be pretty clear cut, because like, according to some things I've heard, it's just like, well, McLaren offered him a contract to race. Alpine, you didn't. McLaren wins.
Yeah, this,
because as we learned throughout all of the proceedings here, Mans was going to be on loan for 2 years to Williams.
That's the George Russell strategy. That's how we got years of George Russell pity until he finally got that Mercedes drive. They don't want to do that shit again.
Like, it works if you can promise a really good seat at the end, like what George Russell inevitably got. He's in a top three car, maybe even top two car in the field right now in Formula One. That doesn't fly when you're a midfielder. Like, and from all accounts of what Piastri's told the media, it looked like he was getting dicked around. It seems like a very typical Alpine junior driver scenario where their youngsters just don't get opportunities at the highest level. And, you know, like, to a degree, I get it, because last year their combination of Alonso and Ocon was really good. It was a fantastic team. You know,
this year it's been really good.
Yeah. What they've got is a fundamentally very solid team. Good car, good drivers, and they have a good chance of finishing fourth in the Constructors' Championship this year. Their best season since coming back, right? The problem is that you've got a 40-year-old on your roster, and
now he's leaving.
Not anymore. No, and he's now gone.
Now he's gone, and you've dicked around the frontline talent prospect that was going to take his job so much that even before Alonso was confirmed to be leaving, Oscar had made it clear to them he wasn't driving for them next year. How did he screw the pooch that badly on this?
He made it clear as, like, Daniel Ricciardo was being lied to about his future at McLaren.
Good lord.
I don't know. Alpine at one point had Oscar Piastri, Zhou Guanyu, and Christian Lundgaard all in their academy, and now they're not racing for Alpine come next season.
None of them. Add them to the burning pile of Jack Aitken and Artem Markelov as guys who was in the academy but never actually drove their car.
They dropped Sascha Fenestraz, and they're about to call him back to their Formula E team.
They threw Nico Hülkenberg in the trash, even though he was more or less matching Ricciardo every other race.
Yeah, he was still good.
He was still, you know, king of the midfield. Carlos Sainz Jr., well, that didn't go so well. He's now driving for Ferrari, has a win. Julian Palmer, enough said, really.
You remember a time when Renault's first factory lineup upon coming back was going to be Julian Palmer?
They had Kevin Magnussen?
Yeah, Magnussen walked. Like, Magnussen was good for him.
Yeah,
we should have never let go of Pastor Maldonado.
They couldn't.
I know the money wasn't there.
They couldn't decide whether they wanted to keep Romain Grosjean, so Grosjean left of his own accord.
Mm-hmm.
None of this looks especially good for Alpine. Oh, and they were so bad that Daniel Ricciardo left of his own accord and got spanked so bad that McLaren bought him out of his contract a year early.
None of this is good.
Nobody won out of this besides Lando Norris.
Yeah, and we all know Lando is exceptional. And this is going to be the problem for Piastri going forward. Like, I love Piastri as a talent.
Absolutely. Like,
he's insanely good.
Don't get rookie Formula 3, Formula 2 champions in consecutive years. Those don't grow on trees. There's only two others that are in the sport. Charles Leclerc and George Russell.
Triple S platinum tier talents.
Yeah.
You know, I can't blame Oscar for bailing when he did.
Yep.
A 2 years at Williams, I'd run too.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he's run directly into the arms of the mediocrity factory because McLaren have also burned through every driver they've stuck into that car since 2013, except Lando.
Mm-hmm.
And now he has to go up against the same Lando who has effectively ended Daniel Ricciardo's career. Daniel Ricciardo, who was a driver of the year contender 2 years ago.
Right. And Piastri's a year out of an actual car.
Yeah.
Good luck. Like, honestly, yeah,
because
good
McLaren,
good luck to him.
The McLaren is a guaranteed shitbox until they get their wind tunnel up and running, their new one.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not until 2024 at the earliest.
But they're not bringing Piastri to try and win a championship. They're trying
You're
to
McLaren.
Bring...
You're McLaren International.
I know what they are and what they should be. I'm just saying that at minimum, they want somebody to make sure that Lando Norris isn't scoring 80% of the points team's points.
Well, he better hope everyone there, and most of all Oscar, better hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, I hope sincerely that McLaren gives him the patience to realize this is going to be a long-term project. Piastri probably needs like 3 years under the belt before we even start having a conversation.
When's the last time McLaren gave a driver 3 years?
Never.
Kevin Magnussen gone out, or Perez gone after one. Magnussen gone after one. Van Dorn gone after two. Sainz gone after, left after two.
Yep.
For a better opportunity. Daniel Ricciardo, 1.5.
The only example they have right now is Lando Norris.
Lando Norris has been exceptional.
Yeah. He is a top 5 driver in Formula One right now.
And that's Carlos Sainz Jr. beat him both years that he was there. He just left of his own accord.
Yeah, because a better team came calling for him because Carlos Sainz was also really good. So it's like... This is a really tricky scenario if you're Oscar Piastri, and I hope, like I said, I hope McLaren gives
him patience. Himself.
Yeah, but this is a very, very difficult climate he's walking into. Mediocre McLaren, underperforming, an elite teammate next to him who's already ran through one of the best drivers in the world, and that's Daniel Ricciardo going into that team. Ricciardo was a top 5 driver in F1.
I think he can come close to breaking even on all the head-to-head numbers. I think it can come close to it.
That's a big reach.
For his sake, given McLaren's reputation, he better.
Like, that is a big, big ask because Lando Norris is an incredible driver. Like,
this is the same team that couldn't look inward and realize maybe they were the problem until they were backmarkers in Mexico 2018 with the same engine that Red Bull is using to dominate with.
Best chassis in the sport, baby.
Best chassis.
Good luck, Oscar. You may need it. And just as we cross the hour mark on our tape and recording, I think it's a good time to wrap this one up. Hope you guys enjoyed that discussion on Colton Herta, because I would love to hear your guys' opinions on this, because I've had many, many in my Twitter mentions regarding this, and all of them valuable, and all of them valid and useful. And like, it's a fascinating discussion with no easy right or wrong answer. That's what makes it so fascinating.
Because only Sith deals in absolutes.
Precisely. And the nuance is what makes it interesting. And I hope you guys enjoyed all of that. Next episode will be MotoGP on the San Marino Grand Prix. Francesco Bagnaia, still undefeated since becoming a criminal. And now he's trying to piss off even more fans. We'll get into why in a minute. Formula One is back this weekend with the Italian Grand Prix at Monza. Look out for the mustard-stained engine cover on that Ferrari. And I don't even hate it as much as the other guys in here do. Like that's saying something. Also, look out for episode 394 coming up later this weekend as well on IndyCar at Portland. So it is a loaded schedule. We're going to keep racking them up. You keep knocking them down and listening to them for us. Basically, you can find us one more time, youtube.com, facebook.com/motorsport101, Twitter, motorsport_101, at Harrison101HD, at CBuckley917, at RJOConnell, Instagram, motorsport101pod, patreon.com/motorsport101. Back us on there if you want early access to shows and all of that good stuff. But until next time, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley and RJ O'Connell. And for listening through this entire episode, we grant you one super license. Sayonara.
Later, y'all. Be sure to cash in your 250 kilometers worth of testing.